Breaking news today on Jay Sekulow Live. Sally Yates to the Senate Judiciary Committee says Jim Comey went rogue.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
You didn't authorize the interview. As a matter of fact, you wanted to go to the White House and tell them about the problem, didn't you?
That's right. I thought that that was the more immediate issue.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
When you heard about the interview, you got upset, didn't you?
I was upset that Director Comey didn't coordinate that with us and acted unilaterally. Yes, I was.
Did Comey go rogue?
Then you could use that term, yes.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Remember, this is the second hearing the Senate Judiciary Committee has conducted into Crossfire Hurricane and potential wrongdoing. There's also the U.S. attorney looking at the Russia Gate. There's a U.S. attorney looking at unmasking separately from that of Mike Flynn. So the first hearing, it was Rod Rosenstein. Now Sally Yates is appearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee, chaired by Senator Lindsey Graham, and she's under questioning. But because remember, she was in that Oval Office meeting on January 5th, 2017, with President Obama, Vice President Biden, other key officials discussed like Comey, and then you had John Brennan there, Director of National Intelligence Jim Clapper, a National Security Advisor Susan Rice, and she was the person in the meeting who supposedly said she had no idea what the meeting was about. So she's been asked about that. She's been asked about Jim Comey sending in the FBI agents. And here's what she had to say about Jim Comey unilaterally deciding to bypass the White House counsel's office, bypass her, and just send in two FBI agents to the White House to interview Mike Flynn. Take a listen.
You didn't authorize the interview. As a matter of fact, you wanted to go to the White House and tell them about the problem, didn't you?
That's right. I thought that that was the more immediate issue.
And when you heard about the interview, you got upset, didn't you?
I was upset that Director Comey didn't coordinate that with us and acted unilaterally. Yes, I was.
Did Comey go rogue?
Then you could use that term, yes.
So there you have the Acting Attorney General of the United States, Deputy Attorney General, Sally Yates, saying that, in fact, James Comey went rogue in the way he handled this setup of this interview. And this is just, by the way, just so you know, this is just the beginning of her testimony. And there's a lot of other admissions, including admissions about FISA warrants and FISA abuse. So I think we've got to be clear here. What do we have at the outset of this? A key admission. What is that key admission? That he went rogue. He went rogue. Then you're going to find out that they did not file protocols, and she makes a statement saying something like, that's an understatement. I don't know if we have that one up yet. Do we have that one, Will? We'll have that next for the next segment. But that tells you, gives you a little bit of the tone of what's happening here, of what's been uncovered.
And Sally Yates, this is no fan of President Trump. Okay, so this is someone who became acting attorney general for President Trump, but then refused to enforce the travel ban, which the Supreme Court held was constitutional, and was fired over that. So she's no fan. She's an Obama administration holdover. But she, again, what we hear time and time again, Dad, I think that's very clear, is that Jim Comey was the ringleader of the wrongdoing at the FBI. And he had his fellow, his fellow clowns, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, and Lisa Page, come along with him in the wrongdoing. And they were telling these DOJ, not even informing DOJ officials about what they were doing.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, when you talk about going rogue and violating protocol, understand what they were dealing with here. The President of the United States and his administration. That's what we're talking about. So this is not some insignificant procedural error. This has huge consequences and set the framework for what ended up becoming a investigation fraught with problems from the beginning.
Remember, we're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Monitoring the hearing as it continues as well. There's a lot more from it as it continues. Always go to ACLJ.org. Find out more about all the work that we're doing, the cases we're doing across the country. That's at ACLJ.org. And if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, share this broadcast with your friends and family. Click that share button as we analyze Sally Yates' testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live. My dad is back in the studio with us. Jay Sekulow joining us. So is Andy Economo, former U.S. attorney, and still does both the defense work and prosecutorial work. So understands and is from Georgia. So is familiar with Sally Yates, to say the least.
Yeah.
So, Dad, I think, you know, interesting. You know, we've already played the fact that Sally Yates has said Jim Comey was rogue. Okay, so he's a rogue FBI director. And I think that both sides of the aisle, if they were being honest, would agree with that. Certainly Hillary Clinton believes with that, agrees with that. And we thought that it was wrong. Him kept going back and forth about like the Hillary Clinton thing
right to her, right.
Leading up to the election. So you have that statement. Then you've got more, again, from Cornyn, too.
I like this one.
Byte 57. This is Senator John Cornyn to Sally Yates testifying today. Take a listen.
You're the direct supervisor of the FBI director. If he didn't consult with you or tell you what he was doing, or he didn't respond to your inquiries about it, wouldn't that strike you as highly unusual?
It's not ideal.
Not ideal. Well, that's quite an understatement.
It is an understatement, sir.
Okay, we'll agree on that.
All right, so this is, you know, a little bit of a joke there, but the truth of the matter was, Andy, the lack of coordination that the FBI agent went around the Department of Justice in interviewing General Flynn and in the procedures that they implemented. And Sally Yates says an understatement. She acknowledges that her not ideal is an understatement. This shows you the systematic failures that was happening under her watch.
That's correct, Jay. She is the Deputy Attorney General, is the direct supervisor of the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and that is Comey. She calls him a rogue. She calls him a rogue on national before the Senate Judiciary Committee on national television, and she then tries to a little underplay that and play cute with Senator Cornyn by saying, well, that's an not of the proper protocol, or that is not the official way of doing things, instead of saying that is wrong. He should have gone to me before he went to the White House to interview Flynn and send agents over there. So she's playing cute and fast. But again, we got to remember, Sally Yates is a committed Obamaite. She's a Democrat. She's not going to play straight with any Republican that she can possibly respond to. Senator Hawley really leaned into her significantly, even to the point where she drew a rebuke from Senator Feinstein. He did, for his questions, but all of them were legitimate questions from someone who is a committed Democrat. We know her in Georgia. We know how she plays fast and loose with words, Jay.
Let me, Jordan, I'd like to, and you know, we talk a lot about the FISA abuse, and let me say something here. FISA, unmasking, I'm holding in my hand the quarterly, this is just the quarterly report. If you're watching on TV or Facebook or any of our social media platforms, this is one quarters. Here it is. If you're on radio, which most of you are, that's where most of you hear us, it's, it's got to be 100 pages, maybe more than that. And it's our quarterly FOIA report. And by the way, if you remember the ACLJ, our Law and Justice Council, you get these. And they're good to have. They're very important. It gives you a lot of information. One of the information pieces we got was all of the unmasking that was going on, leading to FISA warrants and the false FISA warrants. Listen to this question from Senator Graham to Sally Yates, number 31.
Does it bother you that the FISA court rebuked the Department of Justice and the FBI regarding the Carter Page warrant application?
Senator, I believe that the Department of Justice and the FBI have a duty of candor with the FISA court that was not—
Do you believe they fulfilled that duty?
No, I do not believe that they did.
I mean, right there, that is huge, that she just admitted under oath before the Senate Judiciary Committee that the FBI did not fulfill their duty of candor. This is getting to where Senator Graham said that it already appears that the FBI lied to the FISA court via the Department of Justice. Now, whether the DOJ attorneys making the application knew or not, and that was just over the fact that the source of the dossier wasn't Russia-based, but was actually at Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Now he teased that there was also, he could prove this week, that they lied to Congress, which would be a second criminal charge.
Right.
And I think that's where he's going with this line of question right now.
I think so, too. And, Andy, it shows the irregularity that was taking place both within the interview process of General Flynn, but also within the FISA surveillance application and the process that was not followed through there.
Yes, Jay. I mean, and, you know, she was asked the question several times from the Republican senators, did you read this application? Did you look at it? Did it pass the constitutional and statutory and factual muster that it should to go to a FISA court? And she finally grudgingly admitted that she was responsible for it, and no, it did not, and that General Horowitz, the Inspector General, was correct in his 7 or 17 findings of irregularity in it. So what we've got is under the Obama administration and Sally Yates acting as the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, not being candid. And when Senator Graham said, did you understand this as a rebuke, she refused to say that, and she finally grudgingly admitted, no, this is not the proper procedure. No, of course it's not the proper procedure. And yes, that was a rebuke. The FISA court said the government acted antithetical to the candor that it should have recognized toward the court, and it did not do it properly.
Yeah, and they also put in the FISA court put in new application procedures had to be made. They were concerned about trusting the Department of Justice on any of these any further longer, and it raised a whole host of issues. Now, listen to, here's another one talking about on the FISA issue. Listen to number 53.
You told me you did review them in their entirety. Okay.
It's possible that there's some boilerplate language that's in every FISA that I might not have reviewed again, but I certainly reviewed all of the factual information in the FISA.
Of course, the factual information in the FISA was wrong, and maybe the boilerplate that you didn't review this time was under penalty of perjury, because she also testified to the Inspector General that she could not recall reviewing those FISA applications. I don't know if we have that one yet. We'll get that one. And Andy, she did, in fact, before the Senate committee, say that she did review it. She may not have read the boilerplate, but she reviewed the factual allegations. She should have reviewed the whole thing, frankly.
That's true. She did say that to Senator Grassley. I reviewed it. And remember, Jay, she signed it and she signed an amendment to it. She had a greater responsibility. And when you're spying on an American citizen, because that's exactly what this asked the court to do, to look at every single word in that application, and if you've got any questions about it, to follow up on it and to ask about it and to find out the details about it. She failed miserably in that responsibility, and she grudgingly admitted today that she failed to do what her duty as Deputy Attorney General was.
You know, we're going to take calls, 1-800-684-3110, because there's a lot of words being thrown around here, terms being thrown around here that have importance and meaning. Robert called in from Maryland on line one. If you want to talk to us on the air, we're live, 1-800-684-3110. Give us a call now. Robert, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hi, Robert.
Yeah, hi, Jordan. Hi, Jay. I wanted to ask the both of you, in light of the testimony from Sally Yates before this particular Senate committee, that James Comey went rogue, what more specifically does she mean by the former director of the FBI, James Comey, went rogue? Rogue in what specific ways? And if he's found definitely indeed that he went rogue, what would be the penalty that James Comey would suffer, in addition to Sally Yates, since she was the acting deputy attorney general of the Department of Justice?
Interesting, Robert, to even look at, you know, what does rogue really mean? What do they mean when they use a term like rogue? And the simple definition of rogue is a dishonest or unprincipled man. So that's what she called Jim Comey today, a dishonest man. Dishonesty as an FBI director could lead to criminal charges. That could lead to real serious violations. Now, it ultimately led to his termination, which, of course, the Democrats were up in arms about. But now they've got their own Democrat Deputy AG, former acting AG, Sally Yates, who is, again, no fan of President Trump, calling Jim Comey exactly the kind of term of the reason why you would fire a person.
Right.
He was rogue. He was an unprincipled, bad, dishonest person. That's the definition in basicdictionary.com.
Okay, so Jordan said something really important here, Andy, and I want us to focus on this because that's really important. You've got the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, who ended up being the Acting Attorney General of the United States for about 10 days, saying that the FBI director went rogue. Now, there was a whole aspect of the Mueller report about whether Comey should be fired or not, or could be fired. That in and of itself, the way in which the Flynn matter was handled, of course, FISA later, but the Flynn matter was handled, not to procedure, going rogue, not telling the FBI, not telling the Department of Justice. When you've got the Deputy Attorney General, Acting Attorney General of the United States, saying the FBI director is rogue, you know what you do? You fire him.
You do exactly that. And who did that? They waited and waited and waited, and it was only through the guts that President Trump had to fire him at the request of the Attorney General and Rod Rosenstein, supporting that this rogue was ultimately dismissed from his high and important office.
Folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls as we come back. 1-800-684-3110. We continue to monitor the hearing as well. We'll have more sound from that, more analysis from that, from our FOIA report as well. If you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, I can show you this is just for the winter and spring. And it includes the FOIA that led to the unmasking win we had just about a week and a half ago. Go to ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are covering the hearing ongoing right now, and it's being covered on C-SPAN, and I know you can see it some other places. Sometimes Fox is cutting into it, but we are covering it for you on this broadcast as it continues. This is the second hearing the Senate Judiciary Committee has held looking into the potential wrongdoing in the Russia investigation and the origins of the Russia investigation, and this one specifically looking at what was going on with the FISA applications, Carter Page, and the actions to send in FBI agents to interview Mike Flynn, going around the normal process where Sally Yates called that rogue. And again, calling Jim Comey rogue means she was calling him a dishonest or unprincipled man, someone that you'd want to fire if they were FBI director, right? And probably their deputies too, the people they chose to be their deputies, because unprincipled, dishonest people probably hire unprincipled and dishonest people to surround them, like Andy McCabe and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and DOJ attorneys that alter emails that are going to go before FISA courts. That's the dishonest kind of people that get surrounded by, that you surround yourself by when you yourself are being called rogue by someone who is basically on your side politically that doesn't like this president either. But what we're starting to see, Dad, and I knew this was coming when you got a real criminal investigation on three fronts.
She's protecting herself.
Right. And so she's decided.
She's pretty honest.
She's being pretty honest. And her person to point to is Comey, Comey, Comey.
Yeah, she's making clearly Comey is now in her crosshairs as the guilty party, so to speak. Now, it's interesting. I want to play two sound bites and listen to these. We're going to comment on these. Let's first, this is an exchange between Senator Graham. Again, this is on the FISA applications. Senator Graham and Sally Yates, number 32.
Knowing then what you know now, would you sign that application?
Senator, I would never sign any document.
So I take that to be no, because that document was a fraud. Is that a fair statement? If you knew then what you know now, you wouldn't have signed it?
I wouldn't sign anything that I knew to contain errors or omissions.
Well, did that contain errors and omissions?
Yet, and I would never knowingly sign a document. I didn't do that in the 27 years I was.
I believe you didn't know. I believe you didn't know that what you signed was wrong. The question is, if you had known, you wouldn't have signed it. Is that correct?
No, if I had known that it contained incorrect information, I certainly wouldn't have signed it.
Okay. Now, she said to the Inspector General that she didn't recall reading it, the FISA warrant. Take a listen to this exchange with Senator Hawley.
You told the Inspector General that you had no recollection, actually, of reviewing renewal application number one. Is your testimony today different?
No, I think what I told the Inspector General is I didn't have a specific recollection of sitting at my desk and asking questions about it, but I most assuredly reviewed it.
So, Andy, two contrary statements. I mean, nice try, but strike, that's for sure. That doesn't cut it.
It took Senator Graham four questions, four times he had to go back to her to ask her, would you have signed it if you had known it contained false information? On the fourth try, she finally said, no, I would not have signed it under those circumstances. So again, the disingenuous, slippery slope Sally Yates, slippery Sally, that's what I'm going to call her, is now finally, after having been questioned four times by Senator Graham on that simple point, she could have answered the first time, no, I would not have signed it, finally concedes to it. And this is a dedicated Obama administration high official, second ranking in the Justice Department, failed us in the responsibility that she had to fly spec in detail that application for surveillance of an American citizen.
Let me play the follow-up question. You get Jordan's comments on this one. Here's the follow-up from Holly.
You said that you did not have any specific recollection of reviewing renewal application number one, but today you say you did. That's great if you did, because I'd like to ask you some more detailed questions. I just want to get clear on this testimony.
Yes, I did.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what do you have there, Jordan? She tells the Inspector General one thing, no specific recollection.
Right.
Now when she's being cross-examined on it, she tends to remember everything.
Yeah, and she said, you know, I didn't really remember this. But, I mean, I tell you, Dad, we've been in the Oval Office. Now, sometimes there are a lot of people in the Oval Office, and there's quick meetings. But I will tell you this. If there's a meeting going on, and it's the President of the United States, the Vice President, the National Security Advisor, the Director of National Intelligence, the FBI Director, and the Deputy Attorney General, and Peter Strzok, you would remember. You would remember. Yep. And you would recall who was there. Because that was a serious meeting, especially because she got upset that she was kind of kept out of the loop. She looked like she didn't know what was going on in front of the president, so she was mad at Comey for not briefing her about what was being discussed, because she looked like, well, and she was, not informed. At least that's what she's saying. But again, it's interesting how quickly they are reminded when, you know, these Peter Strzok notes come out, it says DAG was there.
Yeah, so it goes back to, the DAG meaning the Deputy Attorney General. So, Andy, you got Sally Yates saying that Comey went rogue. The president eventually fires Comey. This is just the procedural aspects we're talking about now. Then you get into the substantive. And the substantive is the false statements in the FISA warrant. That's a substantive violation of the law.
I can't get around that, Jay. Yeah. I can't get around the fact that she went, sat down at her desk, supposedly read this, signed off on it, went to a FISA court, a federal intelligence surveillance court, okay, to get a warrant to spy on an American citizen, and she handles it in such a cavalier fashion. Well, maybe I didn't read the boilerplate. What are you talking about? You're talking about spying. You read every letter from the first on that page to the last of that page. And if you've got any questions about it, which you should have had because all of that steel stuff was in there, you send it back. And you say, what's this? What's this? What's this? I don't understand that. I'm not putting my name to this before a federal court. She didn't do that. She failed us in that. She failed her administration, and she failed her government.
I think that's right. I mean, I don't know if there's a, you know, Jordan, I'm looking at this, we've been involved in this stuff since the beginning. So I'm trying to put some historical context on this. I said this during the Mueller probe, that the irregularities in that investigation, which are now legendary, are breathtaking. And now when you get the inside story of what is actually happening here, I think it's even worse.
Yes, no, I think it gets worse and worse and worse because you realize just how high level this coordinated campaign to take down an incoming president was. So they were doing everything they could. They know they lost the election. Okay, they lost the election. So they wanted to use the second option, the insurance plan. And now we know that people like Obama and Biden were involved in trying to help carry out that insurance plan in their final days of office. Remember, it was, again, the same day that Sally Yates is asked about that meeting in the Oval Office, January 5th, President Obama's chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, unmasked Michael Flynn, put in the request. Last unmasking request made by the Obama administration that we know of, that was declassified by the DNI, Rick Grenell, was from Joe Biden. I mean, this was the top level coordinating the takedown of the incoming president.
All right, folks, we're in a matching challenge campaign here for the month of August. We had a great July. Your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference. You enjoy this broadcast? Your support of the ACLJ keeps us coming to you on TV, on Facebook, on radio stations. ACLJ.org, matching challenge, ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
When you heard about the interview, you got upset, didn't you?
I was upset that Director Comey didn't coordinate that with us and acted unilaterally. Yes, I was.
Did Comey go rogue?
Then you could use that term, yes.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Yeah, it's very interesting here. The questioning we are covering right now is Sally Yates, former for a very short period of time, acting Attorney General, but really Deputy Attorney General of the United States. And she was a holdover temporarily from the Obama administration in the Trump administration, ultimately fired over her refusal to enact the president's travel ban, which the Supreme Court held to be constitutional. So she was wrong about that being unconstitutional. Today she's being questioned about, you know, what she did and didn't know about the Flynn matter and the Russia investigation and the FISA warrants. And, you know, we've put together a lot of this, Dad, and she was asked, and I think this is interesting because we've got a Facebook that's come in from Sydney on Facebook because Comey's coming up so much again today.
Yep.
And she says, I'd like to get Andy's opinion on it as well, too. Do you think just Sally Yates is throwing Comey under the bus to protect herself?
Let me do a quick one, and then I'll let Andy, because he knows Sally Yates a lot better than I do. I think what Sally Yates' strategy here is to deflect. I don't think she's not telling the truth, from what I gather. I think she's deflecting it to Comey because Comey was the primary actor here. Andy?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jay. I agree with you totally. Comey was the director of the FBI, and Comey, of course, knows everything. There's nothing he doesn't know. He is St. James Comey, the pious, the divine, and the omniscient. And he decided he was going to send in a couple of FBI agents to try to corral Michael Flynn and to try to get him to lie or to get him to be fired. He wasn't going to disclose that to his boss, Sally Yates. He just did it himself. She finds out about it and goes nuts. She's offended by it. She says today, months later, she calls him a rogue, an undisciplined person. Now, that carries consequences and should. I don't think she's lying about that because it was a personal affront to her. It's my deputy, my subordinate, not telling me anything and doing it on his own. I would be mad. I would be mad as hell, to use a Lindsey Graham expression.
Well, let me say this, Jordan. You mentioned the fact that we've had meetings at the Oval Office with numerous people there. You don't forget them, the ones that are memorable. This meeting
Meetings. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of people coming for like a couple minutes. That's one thing. Real meetings, remember.
They had a real meeting, and Senator Graham asked about this real meeting. And let's play this video, audio and video for our TV audience. Number 34.
Let's talk about a January 5th meeting. Was the vice president there?
Yes, he was.
Okay. Did he mention the Logan Act?
You know, I don't remember the vice president saying much of anything in this meeting.
So you don't remember him mentioning the Logan Act?
No, I don't.
Did anybody mention the Logan Act?
I have a vague memory of Director Comey mentioning the Logan Act.
Director Comey mentioning the Logan Act, an act that is unconstitutional on its face and has never been successfully used for a prosecution ever.
No,
because certainly not in the last 125 years.
No, 1789.
But Comey's thinking about that.
Never been utilized. Comey and Biden.
Says Biden did not.
Yeah, but in Strzok's notes, he said Biden did.
Okay.
He said Biden brought it up. So she might not remember that Biden brought it up, but she's like confused about this whole thing, supposedly, if we believe her, about what she's even like listening to. She doesn't even understand. So she does acknowledge the Logan Act was brought up, at least by Comey. And in the notes, that would be their attempt to justify even continuing to investigate Flynn. Well, maybe he violated some law that's from 1789. It's never been utilized in court, ever. And everyone believes it's unconstitutional, but it's not been taken off the books because it's never been utilized. And it's about, can an American talk to a foreigner, and is that illegal because they could be like representing the U.S. government? This was at a time, you know, of course, 1789, that I think Senator Graham said it, every U.S. senator would be violating the Logan Act. Then, because they talked to Ford. I mean, all of us would be. So they use that as the basis to go rogue and send in two FBI agents to continue and really launch then the next stage of their investigation from Crossfire Razor to Crossfire Hurricane to go after President Trump directly and get a special counsel appointed, as Comey said. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. I think this is interesting, too, to set up, and we are going to continue to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. But to the Flynn matter specifically, you know, when it was like, you know, what were you exactly, did you think that they were investigating when you finally found out about the investigation? So now you know about it, Sally Yates. What did you think they were investigating? I mean, these back and forth, she never clear the first answer, and that's usual in these hearings. But even the second and third, it usually takes like question four to get her to finally say what she believes. Take a listen. This is Byte 50.
I want to make sure I understand this. The interview with General Flynn, were you investigating a policy difference between the Trump administration and the Obama administration?
No, Senator, we were not investigating a policy difference.
Well, you weren't investigating a crime, were you?
We were investigating a counterintelligence threat.
Okay, is it a counterintelligence investigation based on a policy difference?
It's a counterintelligence investigation based on the Russian systematic attempts
Wait a minute. This is very important. Your beef with Flynn was he was undercutting Obama policy. Is that what you were worried about?
Well, what we were worried about was that he was undercutting Obama policy, and then he was covering it up.
So this is her approach to justify, I think, to try to justify this policy difference, that he was covering it up. He wasn't covering it up.
Undercutting Obama policy. This is the incoming NSA administration that publicly stated they disagreed with the Obama policy.
But there's another aspect of this. A policy difference, Andy, cannot be the basis upon which a criminal action begins. And the FBI agents that interviewed Flynn said they did not see any intent to mislead.
No. This is why she's stumbling all over herself, Jay. What she's doing, again, is protecting the Obama administration's policy decision. And any policy decision that does not comply with what Obama's policy was going to be made somehow by them a crime. They were determined to make it a crime to violate what the fearless leader, the community organizer's policy was. They were determined to make it a crime. And if it wasn't Yates who was going to do it, it certainly was Comey who was going to do it. And Comey tried to get it done. He tried. The notes of the FBI agent show that he sent him in there to get him to lie or to get him fired. Okay? That was a determination. This man is a threat to Obama's policy. We're going to get him. That's the plain truth of it, and that was the intention. And that's why Bill Barr, correctly, after all is said and done, said, we're not prosecuting Flynn. It's over with. It was a bad prosecution to begin with, and I'm not continuing it.
Let's go to Lewis in Colorado on line one. Lewis, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yeah.
Hey, Lewis.
I wanted to ask on, wasn't that the same excuse Rosenstein gave, that he didn't read the whole FISA warrant before he signed off on it?
Yeah, do we have the sound from Rosenstein, and then we'll play the sound from Yates, too, saying she didn't read it either. It was like boilerplate. So here's what Rosenstein said about the FISA warrant. Take a listen.
Were you aware that the application mischaracterized Christopher Steele's past work with the FBI as a confidential human source and failed to include information from his source questioning his reliability?
No, I was not aware of that.
If you had known about these errors and omissions as of June 29, 2017, would you have signed off on it?
No.
Why not?
Senator, my understanding is that these FISA applications followed a very rigorous process, and that they were accurate, that they were verified. The whole principle of having an agent sign it under oath is that you can rely on the facts.
Okay. So he tells you that, you know, it was just kind of routine. Then Sally Yates gets asked the same kind of questions.
You told me you did review them in their entirety, okay?
It's possible that there's some boilerplate language that's in every FISA that I might not have reviewed again, but I certainly reviewed all of the factual information in the FISA.
Well, which was wrong, by the way. But, you know, this cavalier attitude about you're getting a foreign intelligence surveillance warrant on an American citizen. Read the whole thing.
That's the key. These are not the normal FISAs that come across their desk. These are FISA warrants on American citizens.
Who happen to be affiliated with the campaign.
Yeah, so they should be high priority for the DAGs, the deputy attorneys generals, who handle this and make the final approvals on putting these warrants forward, sign off on them. And so that's the kind of FISA warrants you do need to go through with a more fine-tooth comb. And neither one of them, Rosenstein or Yates, tried to say they did. In fact, they said they kind of looked through it, but a lot of it's boilerplate, and that was that. They signed off on it because by the time it got to their desk, fine, whatever.
Yeah, but, you know, Andy, this goes to the point of where the FISA court said you can't do that to us again. I mean, that this was a fraud on the court.
That's exactly right, Jay. This is antithetical to the provisions under which the FISA court operated, and they said that. I have never seen a court on its own motion, sua sponte, as we say in the law, on its own, castigate the Department of Justice for bringing that kind of a document before it. But as you remember, the chief judge of the court said, you have violated all your internal procedures. You've brought us a piece of garbage here. We're never going to trust you again. I mean, that's a pretty damning statement for a FISA court judge to make, a court to make on its own.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I think that, and look, Sally Yates, it's clear to me that Sally Yates knew exactly what was going on here, but we also have to remember, Jordan, that they had made, at least reports indicate, that they had made a couple of attempts to try to get the FISA warrants and were not successful, at least initially.
Right.
So this was a part of an ongoing investigation that she is responsible for.
Yeah, and the reason why is they kept getting denied, supposedly, is because there was just not enough there for a FISA court judge to issue the warrant, which is so rare. I mean, these are rubber stamps usually. So that's when we believe, and again, FISA court is secret, that they started bringing in more of the dossier, Dad. And the dossier, which we now know, has been completely discredited, and to the point now that not only is it discredited, there may have been criminal activity because of the sourcing. The main source for Michael Steele was not Russia-based, as the FBI and DOJ presented to the FISA court, which would be a crime. They were based in Washington, D.C. at the Brookings Institute. And so that was a lie to the FISA court. That's a crime. Senator Lindsey Graham, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, has also said they lied to Congress about that the primary source for Steele was Russia-based. And in fact, they were D.C. think tank-based. So that's a lie and a crime. So two acts of criminal activity just within these FISA applications that were already having trouble getting approved. So, Dad, they tried to do anything possible to try and get it through. Yeah. So they went to even information they knew to be suspect. They knew that Christopher Steele,
of course,
because he had already been fired by them and had they had stopped working with him as a source.
Yeah, they actually fired him for leaking information to the press.
Also illegal.
Yeah. And then, but you still had this bad, and there's this whole thing, and I hope it will play in the next segment. This discussion about Bruce Orr's involvement and Bruce Orr still being there. If we have that, we'll play it next segment. And what's interesting about this whole thing is Bruce Orr still is at the Department of Justice. He was the go-between between Christopher Steele and the FBI. And all of this is going on, Andy, while they know that the information being provided is questionable at best and false at worst.
Well, that's what I keep wondering. Why is Bruce Orr still at the Department of Justice? And wasn't his wife working for Fusion GPS, this incestuous relationship among these people? And yet it's not been exposed and it's not been put out until we have a Senate Judiciary Committee having hearings on it. And finally it comes out and she even admits that Bruce Orr is still there. Why is he still there? I'd like to know. I'd like the Senate to ask that question because he was part and parcel of the entire operation.
I suspect, and I you know, look, I mean, this is just a suspicion I have, Jordan. I suspect that these hearings are going to get to the bottom of a lot of this, coupled with what is being done by John Durham.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I think these hearings are serious. The people are taking them seriously. They are very real. The questions are, we're getting a lot more information. We're learning a lot more about who was kind of taking the lead, who was uninformed, and who was uninformed to the point where they were willing to under oath call someone rogue. You know, Sally Yates saying that. And who was them all saying that they didn't even read these FISAs, really. It was boilerplate kind of stuff. Even though it involved American citizens, so a FISA warrant on an American, and and then on a presidential campaign. So all of those impacts. So you've got this going on, Durham, and then the U.S. attorney in Texas looking at just the potential of crimes committed because of all the unmasking requests and the leaking out of the information from that was received after the unmasking request. So you put all of that together, I think finally all of the pieces to this giant puzzle, and it is a huge puzzle, Dad, are coming together. But it is one that we have to keep going through and keep reminding ourselves. See, I talked about this with Sean Hannity yesterday. We do these broadcasts every day and we talk about this. To keep this all in your head is impossible. You've got to sometimes go through the notes, go through all the dates, go through all the lines. And that's what we're doing for you every day on Jay Sekulow Live. When we talk about this issue, is so that you remember all the pieces that fit together. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. So we got Ted Cruz has begun his questioning as well, and we don't have it yet. But we have
the Orr questions, the Bruce Orr question. I think this is an important one. That's the one that's being loaded right now. Okay, so because this is Andy made the point, Jordan. Yeah. You said it too. Bruce Orr, who was in the middle of all this, whose wife worked for Fusion GPS, is still employed at the Department of Justice.
Yeah, he's still in the senior position. He lost one of his top roles. He's kind of demoted, but I mean, I don't think it affected his salary at all. That demotion, he's just no longer the head of a department within the Department of Justice. But what I think is important is that when it comes to Bruce Orr, there's got to be something there because of Nellie Orr working with Christopher Steele, and remember they both testified behind closed doors under oath. So I just wonder if Bruce Orr is one of their top. Sources, he's cooperating with the investigation. Maybe he's been given immunity because it is bizarre that he's still there. Unless he is there, he's been given immunity and is their top source to provide as much info as he can on Christopher Steele because his wife was working with Christopher.
Could
Steele.
Could be, but
that's the only reason that I could think of him still being there.
But Andy, it is. Do we not yet? Okay, but it is so odd, Andy, that he is still there.
I can't get over that, Jay. This is a man who was implicated deeply in all this activity, and yet why is he a protected species? Why is he still allowed to parade around the Justice Department as a high-ranking official, considering the role that he played in basically trying to undermine the new president's administration and participating with all those people who are all rogues, in my opinion? I can't understand that. Why is he being protected? What is it about him that no one will call out? What is going on? I think we need to be asking some serious questions about this guy, Bruce Orr.
Yeah, well, here's another question that was asked, and I think this was by Senator Kennedy to Sally Yates about the background of the FISA warrants itself.
Did you check to see if it was drunk? It was junk before you signed off on the FISA applications?
Senator, the affidavit that was provided by the FBI sets forth the factual basis, and we rely upon the FBI to be the fact finders.
So you didn't independently check?
No, Senator, I did not independently fact check, and I'm not exactly sure how I would go about doing it.
Let me be sure.
Well, I'm not exactly sure how I would do it. I would bring the FBI. I'm about to issue a sign off on a FISA warrant on a presidential campaign. As someone affiliated with the presidential campaign, Andy, I think I'd bring those FBI agents into him and say, are you sure you're right about this? Because this is a big deal.
Jay, I have had wire intercepts that I have applied for to courts, okay?
Yep.
And I have had agents of the GBI, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and they have given me an affidavit. I have read the affidavit, but in every instance I brought that agent in and had him or her sit before me and go through it line by line. Where did you get this? 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 How did you verify this information? How do I know that this is the case? I want to know about this and that, because anytime you do a wire intercept or a wiretap, in this case, an application to surveil an American citizen, you better do more than just cursorily review it, as she says. You go and you interrogate that agent. Was it just too much trouble for her to go down the street and ask the question or bring the agent in and ask the question? I think it's reprehensible.
No, I mean, this is, again, what Sally Yates is actually telling Congress, what we've heard so many times from these top officials of the U.S. government that we all pay.
Highest.
The highest you can get. And time again, dereliction of duty. Dereliction of duty. Didn't do their job. Didn't really work. Didn't work so hard. Didn't care. Weren't doing the people's business. Weren't doing the job of government. I mean, that's the truth.
Well, here's the thing. Listen, this is the point on that point. I mean, this is Bite 66. I think this was Senator Hawley on Bruce Orr.
We also know that your deputy, Bruce Orr, knew that Steele was working for the Democrats. And the same deputy, Bruce Orr, your deputy, while he was working for you, was actively facilitating contacts between the FBI and Steele, and also between the State Department and Steele. How did this happen on your watch? Is it normal for you to permit your deputies to facilitate contacts between political parties and the FBI and the State Department? Is that routine behavior?
Permitting Bruce Moore to do anything, as the Inspector General found, I was completely unaware of Bruce Moore's actions.
So the Deputy Attorney General, whose direct report is Bruce Moore, is unaware of Bruce Orr's actions. Well, maybe she should have asked Bruce Orr before she signed off on the FISA warrants.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so
good night.
This is someone who reported directly to her, never knew anything about his wife, you know, being working for a intelligence gathering private firm. I mean, that, which is kind of interesting too, possibly conflict for Bruce Orr. I mean, knew nothing. It's, what were these people doing? They were doing the bidding of the Obama administration.
But even
that's all they did. So if it would hurt Trump, they'd go along with it. Now, will they throw Comey under the bus? Sure. But you know what? Sally Yates today, she even pulled another stunt. She knows how to use Zoom. She knows how to use better tech. She used the regular. It's like if you did it through your iPhone without even putting headphones in. You don't even need AirPods. Just plug in earphones. They have a speaker, and she'd be clear. You know what she decided to do today? Turn on her computer, just put on the microphone, get all the background noise, and all the acoustics are horrible, so that everything she says is mumbled.
Because you couldn't hear the first part.
So it's hard for us in the media and for the senators who are they're hearing it the same way.
Yep.
To even understand what she's saying. So Sally Yates, shame on you for that stunt. Like, we all couldn't figure out, a 10-year-old could have figured out, or maybe 5-year-old.
I mean, look at what we went through for the Supreme Court arguments to get the audio right.
Yes, look at what we went through during the stay-at-home order, where we kept broadcasting to you every single day, and we had clear audio from something. I was in my daughter's bedroom broadcasting live during that when it was the stay-at-home order nationally, and it was clear. Now, was it perfect? No, but was it clear? Absolutely.
I'll tell you what
she decided to pull a stunt on the entire country today and the American people and the U.S. Senate by using audio like that.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? Her stunt ends up making once again James Comey, Andy, the protagonist. He's the protagonist.
He is the protagonist, and he is playing it very cool. He sits back. He reacts with his piety, his know-it-all. He publishes a new book. I heard he's got a book coming out. So, you know, the rogue is now just ruling the roost. And Sally Yates, as Jordan points out, the lack of technology that she used, where you can't hardly hear her and she mumbles and jumbles, sitting in her nice office at King & Spalding in Atlanta, where she got a cushy job because she was the Deputy Attorney General. Very nice. But Slippery Sally, one day you're going to pay the price.
All right, well, that does it for the broadcast today. Let me say this before Jordan gives you the particulars. We are into week one of our August matching challenge. And off to a good start, I have to say. Your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference. Any amount you donate, we get a matching grant for. That's how this broadcast gets to you every single day, 5 days a week, live on TV, live on radio stations across the country, on satellite radio, on Facebook, Periscope. Your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference.
Yeah, just to get this analysis out to you every day, and also for the 1,500-plus families we're trying to assist because of the school reopening problem plans. Donate today, ACLJ.org. Double your impact.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.